Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I do marketing for Gearhart Law, and I have my own startups and podcasts.
Are you one of the 2 in 5 Americans wanting to start your own business or already a business owner? Stay tuned. This show is about starting and growing your business. Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we learn why and how ordinary people just like you started and grew their businesses, and we also talk about the intellectual property that helps protect your innovations.
And now it's time to go to our featured guest, Joe Lopez from Encore Advisory. He's a global business strategist, and he's a startup growth and exit expert. You're talking to us from just outside Zurich, Switzerland. Tell us what you've been up to and what you've got going on for the future.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I just had a successful exit from a startup I created off of a napkin 4 years ago. It was a dream that I had and an idea. 4 years later, I exited the business and sold my shares just a month ago, almost to the day. So I'm out here in Switzerland having meetings as I'm getting ready to form a new advisory group that's going to specialize in helping brands from the EU scale and come into the US and sell their products in the US. Because a lot of these companies over in Europe don't know how to do that. So that's what I'm going to be working on, and I'm very excited about it.
That's great. So what made you decide to get back on the horse so quickly? I would think after an exit, you'd like to take 6 months or a year off and just regenerate.
Gosh, me too. I don't know. I don't have an answer for that question other than if I just stop, I don't know that I'll be able to start again.
I think I have the answer to that question, Joe.
Okay.
I think you're like, Richard, we'll never retire because our brains won't stop working. And we could try to not do anything, and we always end up doing something. You're probably just one of those kind of people that just can't sit around and watch reruns of Gilligan's Island or something.
Hey, that's a great show.
But what she says is right. I mean, it's like you spend 40 years, 50 years turning yourself into a machine of sorts, you know, getting up, doing it every day. And after a while, your neural pathways are just conditioned to keep going, right? I sometimes find it hard to stop, even though I'm supposed to.
I want to talk a little bit about getting a company ready for an exit, because when I was doing the video directory, I tried to start it from day one to be positioned to sell because I knew I didn't want to keep it. And so what can people do with their companies if they're starting a company now? Because we're hoping that some of our listeners are thinking about it. What would you do from day one to set it up so you could eventually have a great exit?
There's a few things. The first thing is to actually position your company and look at the market that you're in. So take a look at whatever market is that you want to go to, whatever industry that is, what trade it is, and see where you might be able to build something that's a little different than the market leaders that you could see in the future might be able to attach to their business or round out something. Let's give an example. Say there's a company in the industry that you want to move into that's selling into consumer products, selling into a big chain retailers, right? And they're really good at that. Are they going to want to buy somebody who's also selling into big chain retailers, or would they want maybe somebody who's selling to mom and pop stores or a specialist at online? And if you can see that from the beginning and you're successful, chances are those competitors are going to see that as well. And that's the number one reason for acquisition is that they try to round out the business.
How do you know when it's time to exit?
Well, that's a personal question for most founders. And it can relate to, I've seen it all across the board because prior to doing what I'm doing now, I was a venture capitalist in Silicon Valley, which means that I was working with a bank that helped fund startups. So I worked with founders that had great ideas and dreams and helped make them come to reality. So, you know, looking at the broad macro view of that, what is it that drives these dreams and these people and what do they want at the end? And that answer is very different. It's an individual, but I would say that for the majority of people, it's when they feel like they've reached a point where their skill set can no longer really contribute to the business and they need to bring in other people who can help either fund it or maybe they're really good with talking, but they need people to help running the numbers more, and they help bring in others to operate the business at a different speed and scale. Those are usually the times where I see businesses wanting a founder to exit. But then there's guys like, let's look at Elon Musk. He drew it all in a napkin, right? And he's still there, and now he's running some of the largest companies on earth. But that's an exception and not the rule. Most of the time, it's an internal thing, and you get an idea, okay, it's time for me to go. Of course, that's not even looking at what your business has done, but just when it's your time and you want to exit.
So you think it's really driven more by founders, and would you say it's frustration and not being able to bring it to grow, or how does this kind of manifest itself?
First and foremost, as we all know, most ideas and dreams don't get off the runway, right? The difference between your great idea and someone else's is it's very important for you to take it out of your drawer and then go execute it. The execution of a new business is the piece that matters, right? Not just the concept of it. So once that's moving and the revenues, you've built sales, you've built customers, all of a sudden you have a company, right? Which is so exciting. When does that satisfy you? How large do you want to get? What is your vision for it? Do you feel like, oh my goodness, I'm getting over my skis here. I need a partner. Again, all individual factors that you feel as you're going as a leader of your dream. But at the end of the day, it is your dream. So a lot of people will die in that sort and say, this is what I'm going to do. There's an old analogy of Cortez who landed in the New World and he burned his ships to show the crew there's no going back. And I love founders that have that mentality.
That's great. Well, so that's kind of interesting because you're talking about it in terms of founders. What about if it's a larger company, you know, with maybe a larger management team or a board of directors? Do they just come in and say, the wind is blowing in the right direction, it's time to sell?
It does depend on the size of the business and then the structure of the business. If you have a board like you're referring to, or that's what your dream is, to have a group of individuals that have invested in the business, then all of that's got to line up. If you are the main majority owner of your company, then at the end of the day, it's up to you, meaning you own 51% of all of your shares. But if someone else does and they own over 50%, then they absolutely can make the decision of what's going to happen to the business and when. So ultimately, and you can learn a lot about this by watching, listening to shows like this and watching Shark Tank about the kinds of ways in which founders will dilute their own ownership stake to take in equity or take in even partners. And at the end of the day, those folks will have a big say in it if they own more of the business than you do.
I think that is really a double-edged sword, what you're talking about right there, because you have to have money to grow. Some people can bootstrap, but if you really want to grow, I think you need some sort of funding. Mm. But then if you give away too much of your company, then it can have the repercussions you just said. You lose control, at least some control, right?
Yeah. For example, I did not have full control over the business that I sold. I brought in, there was a group that was in this involved with me. So to Richard's point, it was a little dance, making sure that everybody was moving to the right cadence so that their goals were the same as mine. Ultimately, it worked out. But it's not, and I'm probably making this a little bit more complicated than maybe it should be. At the end of the day, if the business is running well and there's a motivation to exit, a few things will happen. The business will try hard to grow sales, decrease expenses to show more profit, which are the two ways in business that you can increase profit, only by increasing your sales or decreasing your expenses, and position the company for sale so that it looks competitive to someone that's out there that may want to I'd be a motivated buyer.
When you talk about the motivated buyer, it's kind of funny because we have friends and they owned a business for a long time and had really built it up. They had bought it from somebody and they just sold it. And our friend is sticking around as a consultant for a couple of years, right? But he's got a lot more freedom. And he's telling us, he's like, wow, I can't believe what this guy is doing with the business now.
Great.
I had another question for you. When would you do an IPO, initial public offering, instead of selling? Like, when would you go public with your business?
Yeah, that's a more complicated question because then you're really involving a lot more people and opening up your company to be, you know, individual investors, right? And that's when my old mentor said, as soon as you start looking at putting your company public versus private is when he hands you a tombstone with your company's name on it and the date that it went public. It said, good job, enjoy, because you're dead now. So that's really a whole different deal. When you are looking at taking a company public, you're really looking at scaling. is what that's about. You want that business to be bigger, a huge national brand, perhaps. You want to position it in a way where you can go out and just raise a lot more capital. And then the flip side of that, of course, you've got a lot more people reading your financials, guiding where things will go. So it's kind of the beginning of the end of the control that you have with the business. So to your point, there's never really a right time. What we see in today's society is a lot more technology driven. The technology companies will rush to, you know, get an IPO to kind of, people will want to get in early and participate in that. And they're able to move that pretty quick. But I'm a big fan of private companies and keeping things private and controlled as much as you can.
I'm kind of excited about what Joe's doing with bringing European companies over here. So what's kind of the secret for that? Or how do they make that decision?
So I'm working with a French company and an English company as well, getting into the US market. It's actually quite scary for them if they've not done that before. So the idea there is they've hit some kind of a saturation point, maybe in their market. Maybe a competitor has started to move into new markets, and that's going to drive them, Elizabeth. So there's a number of factors. It's always about the revenue, right? And what could happen. For example, Europeans look at, typically speaking, they look at the American market as a huge opportunity because of the scale that we can do here in the United States with our open footprint of 50 states versus, you know, all the individual countries in Europe. So it can be a little scary for them. They're not sure how to do it, who the right partners are. And they're also terrified of things like Amazon because it's a much less of a force of nature over here than it is at home.
Very interesting. So we have to take a commercial break. We're here with Joe Lopez, global business expert from Anchor Advisory, back with more Passage to Profit right after this.
Have you considered getting life insurance, but you smoke? And you've been told more than once that you need to pay smoker rates, and those rates are too expensive for you? Are you between the ages of 40 and 70? Now you can call our special toll-free number at the Term Lifeline and learn how to qualify for a life insurance policy at non-smoker rates. That's right. Now you can get a life insurance policy, even if you're a smoker, at non-smoker rates. You can save significantly on a life insurance policy. Call right now. Ask our specialist how you can qualify for non-smoker life insurance rates, even if you are a smoker. We'll shop all the top life insurance companies and provide you rates that you can afford. Call now and ask our agents how you can qualify for non-smoker life insurance rates.
800-565-2430. 800-565-2430. 800-565-2430. That's 800-565-2430.
Learn how thousands of smart homeowners are investing about a dollar to avoid expensive home repair bills. John, a former non-customer, said, "My air conditioner broke and I had to spend $1,900 to fix it." Jeff, a customer, wrote, "My air conditioner broke and I got a new one at no out-of-pocket cost." Mary, a former non-customer, wrote, "My heating system stopped running. I had to spend $3,000 to get a new one." Lisa, a customer, wrote, "My heater stopped working. I got it fixed at no out-of-pocket cost." For about $1 a day, you can have all the major appliances and systems in your home guaranteed fixed or replaced. Call now. If the lines are busy, please call back.
Call the Home Warranty Hotline now at 800-255-4940. 800-255-4940. 800-255-4940. That's 800-255-4940.
Now back to Passage to Profit. Once again, Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
And our special guest, Joe Lopez, international business expert. And we've just started digging into what he's doing, bringing European countries to the U.S. And when people bring something in from overseas, do they do it state by state, or are there some federal laws they can bring it in under? Like, how does that work?
The way that I advise clients to do that is, first of all, it's a big country. Yes, there's 50 states. However, when you really boil it down and you look at the population and the consumption in the U.S., there's really only a few states you need to worry about launching in. And then from there, for example, the population in New York, Florida, Texas, California, and then from there, you can branch out into the other regions and markets.
It always comes down to those four states. Those are always in the top four or five states. So if you're coming from Europe, maybe New York makes the most sense, and Florida because they're shorter distance.
So if you just focus in on particularly one market or two in the beginning and shore yourself up, then from there you can build it out. And the same thing goes with Europe. There's really only a few countries that control most of the demand here and most of the population and the money. Yeah. So that's where you'd want to focus.
Typically, when people are thinking about filing patents outside the United States in Europe, it's really always the four major countries: France, Great Britain, Germany, Italy. Sometimes you'll add Spain in there too, but even super big companies will typically focus on just those four or five major countries because that's where all the action is, right? And if somebody tries to do something goofy, do an infringement or something in a different country, it's usually not a lot of sales, or they can find a way to go after them in one of the major countries. The same principle sort of applies here in the U.S. You go for the markets that are the most active.
You know, something that my father always taught me that's very important and applies to this lesson in business of focusing in on different countries or segments, or maybe even cities that you want to start your business in, is to just not try to boil the ocean. In a startup, start with boiling a cup of water, focus on that, get good on that, and then from there, grow out.
Well, that's amazing advice, Joe. Joe Lopez, global business strategist and startup growth and exit expert. Where can people find out more about you and what you're doing and perhaps how you can help them?
LinkedIn.com/J Lopez III.
All right. Joe Lopez from Ancora Advisory, a global firm specializing in internationalization. www.ancoraadvisory.com.
Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing in 31 markets across the United States. In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters Database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey and Rissikat Busari. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X,
and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.